for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another hour of non-league views, news and insights. Flying solo today, but there's much to keep you entertained. Three managers for you, one with a title already under his belt, another in a tight race as he goes for back-to-back promotions, and one manager who has carried the burden of promotion favourites all season and could finally seal it this weekend. So plenty to talk about and plenty for you to listen to. Let's get things underway. So to our first guest of the week, I'm sure he'll say it's far too early to tell, but one of our guests last week was pretty certain that this man will be collecting the title this season in the Southern League Premier South. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, manager at Weymouth FC, Mark Molesley.
Good afternoon. How are we all right?
Well, we're good, and you know, I think the mathematics mean a win for you guys on Saturday at Beaconsfield and defeat for Met Police and with Taunton then failing to win, and the title's yours. Now, when we spoke with the Met Police chairman last week, he pretty much conceded the title to you. Does that sort of expectation place added pressure on you guys?
No, not really. I think even before ball was kicked this season, we've had the pressure put on us. We done well in our first year together last year and went close and unfortunately lost in the playoffs. So, you know, this season we were immediately put under pressure. I think people were expecting us to be up there. So, you know, like I said, I think we've played with the pressure all season. So when it gets to sort of the business end now, I think we're sort of quite used to it. And we just take it game by game. You know, we always train hard and work hard and prepare the best we can. And we've always sort of taken it game by game. But yeah, we obviously sit at the top. Our fate's in our own hand, and it's up to us to get the job done now.
Yeah, it's top of the Southern Premier South. 7 points clear, 4 games to go. You know, looking at your games, you've got Beaconsfield away, Chesham at home, Poole away. I guess there's probably some fans that would probably fancy winning the title over at Poole.
I probably think our fans would love to do that over there. I would like to get it done as soon as possible. And look, we certainly haven't done anything yet. There's a lot of hard work to go, a lot of tough games. I can honestly say there isn't an easy game in this league. I'm not just saying that. Every game presents a tough challenge. You know, so we won't be taking any game lightly. Like I said, we haven't done anything yet. All we've done is put ourselves in a good position, and we said it's up to us now to see it through.
Yeah, and you mentioned the playoffs last year. Does that give you an added incentive to get inside the players' minds to go one better this season?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, we can't hide from that's always been our aim after, you know, last season was about getting the group together and seeing how we done and how we fared. And we probably overachieved in a lot of people's eyes last year. And with that obviously comes, you know, expectations. So we've had to manage some expectations and have that added pressure all year this year. And the playoffs, we sit in a good position here now, and we're doing everything we can to avoid being in that playoff situation again, because it does become a little bit more of a lottery sometimes in the playoffs. And we want to make sure we go up as champions.
Yeah, and obviously you mentioned that the team, a great team effort, but the goals of Brandon Goodship, but yet again a massive part of your success. 38 league goals last term. And another 4 this week already. I think that's 36 this season. There must have been interest from elsewhere for that sort of goal scoring.
Definitely. I think a lot of people are obviously having a look at him, and so they should. He's very prolific. He's proved that in the two seasons. I was fortunately worked with him when he was at Bournemouth as well, so I knew what a good player he was. And I like to think that we play a way that gets the best out in him. And I think that's certainly proved with his goal tally. But I think with Brandon, it's not just his goals. He also assists a lot as well. So, you know, he's more than just a goal scorer for us. He's sets up a lot of our goals and has a key part to play in that as well. So, he's been obviously our talisman and the one who probably takes a lot of the headlines, and rightly so. But, you know, we're very much built on a team ethic, and, you know, everyone plays their part.
Yeah, you mentioned your time at Bournemouth there as well. You started off, you're coaching there in the academy, still there, and that's the day job. I think they sort of all blend into one. There's often much debate in non-league about the disconnect from pro clubs, even when young lads are loaned into the non-league game. Do you see it differently? Is there a vital crossover for the two to work together?
I think so. I think it's, I know from just my experience at Bournemouth, how good the non-league game's been for helping develop our talent. It's such a good grounding for them. I think the non-league game's getting better and better. I think the academies are getting stronger, which means that they hang on with the players a lot longer. There's a lot more good players coming through, and there's not enough places for them, so they're dripping down into non-league and making non-league even stronger. I think with the introduction of better pitches and things like that, I think you're starting to see some really good talent down there. And you know, I'd always be the first to champion non-league talent, and it's a great place to look for professional clubs. I mean, you know, I come out of non-league myself, and you know, it's such a good grounding for me, and it gave me all of, you know, all my experiences that I learned from non-league stood me in good stead.
Yeah, you had a great career as a player. You know, starting off non-league, as you say, Hayes, Cambridge City, Aldershot, Stevenage Borough, Grays Athletic, the England C as well, and then the Football League with Bournemouth, Aldershot, Plymouth, and Exeter. Yeah, was management always the next step for you?
I think when I was younger, I always probably thought, you know, I wouldn't mind having a go at management. Probably my naivety probably felt that I could probably do it. But it wasn't probably till I started coaching, really, that I realised just how little did I know and how much I had to learn. But fortunately, I was very lucky to get back involved with Bournemouth. And they've obviously educated me, and I learned so much. There are so many good people to learn off of there. And just feel that I got a good education. I probably had a little bit more focus and a little bit more of a plan behind me if it did come up. And, you know, the Weymouth job, they approached me to see what I thought. And so I went to an interview because I thought, you know, it'd be great experience. I weren't expecting to get it, but luckily I probably done quite well in the interview, and they liked what they heard, and they gave me a chance, which I think the board at Weymouth were very brave in doing that, because I don't think I was the fans' choice at the time of being an ex-player. I think they'd gone down the ex-player road a couple of times before and it hadn't quite worked out, and they felt they probably wanted someone more experienced at the helm, which is completely understandable. But, you know, I felt I could provide an environment for younger players to try and get better, and that's always been our method, is that we train hard and we work hard and we try and make players better, and then in turn then hopefully, you know, the team's got a better chance of getting results. And hopefully, so far, touch wood, we've had quite positive results, and hopefully we'll have a positive end to the season.
Yeah, it's certainly looking good. You mentioned, you know, starting off in coaching and then moving into management. You obviously see it from, you've got two hats, you know, in your Bournemouth role, it's more a coaching role as a manager. Is there a big difference between coaching and managing, particularly when you're managing in non-league?
I think obviously management results need to be instant, whereas coaching, you can afford to, as part of development, is that you want them to experience failure and success, and that helps you grow and improve. And unfortunately, in management, you don't always get that time, so you need to be, you know, wary of results. And you need to be sort of get instant results as well. But I've tried to get the balance right at Weymouth. You know, our first hat was always to try and develop and make players better, because I think that gives you the best chance of getting results. You know, I've been fortunate that Weymouth have given me my first chance at management and gave me, you know, the time to sort of and the back end to sort of bring in a young squad. Because, you know, when I first took over Weymouth, I think sort of 80% of the players sort of, you know, left, and we went down a different route, and we went to the sort of more young, hungry players, and players that I knew would be able to play the way that we wanted to play, and would thrive in our environment. And fortunately, so far, that they've equipped themselves really well. But it is difficult to try and get that right. If I didn't get as many good results maybe at the start, I probably wouldn't be standing here now getting that, having this conversation. But luckily, I've got a few results and brought ourselves a time to try and build what we've been trying to do.
Yeah. You started off playing in non-league, so you know, was that then non-league management? Was that always likely to be the way that you went? You could have had that ideal of keeping it 9-to-5 football and had weekends off.
Yeah, I think my wife sometimes might prefer it that way, but I've always come from non-league. It was, you know, it was where I learned my trade through non-league. I've always been used to it. I had a long stint in non-league myself, so I've always used to working and then having the Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So I've always sort of had that work ethic and always enjoyed my time. So, yeah, but I think when you're a young manager, I think you've got to go and earn your stripes. I think you've got to go in and try and prove yourself. And if you want to survive in football, you've got to build a strong CV and try and get as many experiences as you can to try and make you the best possible coach or manager you can be. And at the moment, I'm so fortunate that, you know, I've got two roles which I thoroughly enjoy, and two roles where I'm learning so much in. You know, it's like I'm at the Oxford or Cambridge University at Bournemouth. Like I said, there's some of my mentors there. I'm so lucky to, you know, been in the same room as them and learn off of them. So I'll always be totally indebted to them for, you know, teaching me, and always be indebted to Weymouth for giving me the opportunity to practice what I preach.
Yeah, and you've got a number of years on me yet, and we spoke with Tom Killick at Paul earlier in the season, and he thought the biggest change in his time in management had been the players' attitude. Now, you're nearer the players' age, but are players different from your time when you were starting out?
I think definitely. The game's evolving, the game's changing. You've got to manage people a lot more sensitively, really, now. Back in our day, I think you could probably get away with a few more stern words but you know, that's the way of the world now. You know, it's a different way, and you've got to move with it. And football's ever changing, and I think that's the skill of management, is learning how to manage people. It's not one size fits all. I mean, every person's different. Everyone has different needs, and it's trying to work out what works best for them players and how to get the best out of them for your team. But I'd say you have to be a lot more sympathetic sometimes with some of these players. Like I said, I think that's just part of society now, not just football.
Yeah.
They're probably maybe not as mentally tough sometimes as some of the old school players that I used to play for. And sometimes I don't mind sharing a few stories of them, what it's like, and especially the lads at Bournemouth. Like, you know, football's not an easy place. It's a tough place, and it's hard, and you've got to be, you know, technically good and physically strong, but you also got to be mentally strong to make it in this game. And you've got to be mentally strong in non-league as well, because working all day and then trying to train and play, the demands are high, and you've really got to be mentally strong. And that's, you know, we try and work on that side with our players at Weymouth just as much as we do with the on the field stuff as well.
Yeah, and promotion, if it happens, that means National South. You've already said about the pressures, you know, a big club, lots of expectations. How's the club fixed to make that move into the next level? There's lots more travel, added costs. You know, it's a bigger competition as well.
I think it's one we're thoroughly looking forward to if we can get there. I'm always looking for that next challenge. This year's probably been better in travel, but my first year last year in management, the travel was a lot worse than it will be in Conference South. I mean, we were playing Kings Lynn, Kettering, and, you know, we were up Birmingham and Norwich and up around them stretches, really. So I don't think the Conference South, in terms of travel, I don't think that will impact us too much at all. If anything, I think going to the better facilities and the better grounds and, you know, everything steps up. I think, you know, hopefully that challenge will bring out the best of us. But I think our first season up there, we haven't been there for a long time. I think the club, I think it's probably nearly 10 years since it's been at that level. And I think we're probably going there with probably more of the underdog next year, whereas this year we've been up there to shot down, and then probably going up, then you're probably one of the smaller fish to start off with. So, you know, if we can get over the line, then, you know, we'll look to that. But at the moment, I'm not looking that far forward, if I'm honest. We're firmly fixed on this Saturday. We don't get carried away. We've never looked any further than the next game. And I think, you know, we'll stick to that way at the moment. And when it's done, I enjoy speaking to everyone about what we'll be looking to do in the next division. But till it's done, I don't want to talk about it too much, to be honest.
Spoken like a true manager. You've learnt well, sir. You've learnt well. Well, we wish you well at the weekend and for the rest of the season. And thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
No problem. Really appreciate your chat.
So to our next guest, and another manager close to the South Coast, but of somewhat different means and history from our previous guest, Weymouth. Blackburn and Langley are perhaps the archetypal village side. They've done good playing at the Gangwarrily Wreck in the shadow of the former Fawley Oil Refinery near to Southampton. Founded back in 1935, it was promotion as champions from the Wessex League last term that put them into Step 4 and the Southern League Division 1 South. And now after another fantastic season, they're eyeing up back-to-back promotions. 1 point clear at the top with four games to play. They travel to second place Yate Town on Saturday in the hunt for the title. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show. Manager at Blackfield and Langley, Glenn Howes.
Hi, Tim.
Hi, Glenn. Well, there's a build-up, and what a big game ahead this weekend.
Yeah, I think you couldn't have written it, could you, in terms of the fixtures? So it's a big game. There's still three fixtures to play after this one. So, you know, there's still plenty more football and there's still time for probably perhaps one or more, two twists. But, you know, there's no hiding about it. It's a big ticket point for both teams.
And quite a travel to Yate. And there's quite a few in your division in the Somerset and Gloucestershire area. A fair trek, considering, you know, you were in the Wessex League last year, where everybody's fairly close together and sort of knows each other. I guess that's good training for the Southern League Premier South if you end up there.
Yeah, we don't want to get too ahead of ourselves. But the boys have acclimatised really, really well. I mean, even the last 7 days, you know, we've been away to Cinderford Tuesday night. Saturday we were away to Biddeford and then we go away to Yate. But full credit, you know, away Tuesday in the cup, we had 18 players there, you know, two who wasn't involved for various reasons, still chose to travel. So it gives you a slight insight into how close and the camaraderie the boys have developed within the dressing room.
Yeah, that seems to be the magic ingredient. If you're going to be successful, that's the important thing to have in your dressing room, is that closeness and camaraderie.
Yeah, hugely. And they've perhaps gone about it themselves. There's a lot of local players, a lot of Southampton-based players. And then we go sort of down to Bournemouth and Portsmouth, and they all car share. And then, of course, when you do these away trips, it brings another element of cohesion, which they're not quite used to from last year. But the league has been really kind to us in terms of we haven't had too many lengthy travels in midweek, which has been really, really good in terms of Step 4 football and Step 5. You know, we almost were playing Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So from that point of view, it's been nice to spend a lot more time on the training ground.
Yeah, and I mentioned... Yeah, you're top. I guess you're favourites now, and you don't want to edge your bets or anything like that. But with the playoff situation this season, with only five of the seven playoff winners actually gaining promotion, that makes the playoffs even more of a lottery. So it's a proper golden goose to win the title.
Yeah, I mean, whatever will be, you know. We will tweak a couple of things tonight at training, but we feel all the hard work has almost been set. And it's in the footballing gods, so to speak. And if we gain automatic promotion, fantastic. If we go up through the playoffs, brilliant. If we don't, it's been a remarkable season. We never thought we'd be in this position first game of the season. So we're just really looking forward to having the opportunity to finish the job.
And if you did slip into the playoffs, you're a smaller club, you know, different sort of resources. Do you have the squad to push on in the playoffs and that mental capacity as well?
Yeah, I mean, we have a regular 18 and there's one or two players who are dual registered at Step 5 who are more than capable of stepping up and might need to be called upon. But we'll think about that if it occurs and when it occurs. So first of all, our focus is on Saturday.
Yeah, and it's been a great season football-wise, but one as a club that's had a lot of sadness as well with the death of your assistant, Chris Farrell.
Yeah, I mean, it brings the club closer together. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we all sat around, I think it was February, at a committee meeting, and we had a report come back from the league and the ground grading. And the amount of tasks and jobs that were being listed, we truly thought, can we get this done in this short space of time? And Chris was pivotal in that, as all the committee team were doing. And it's a great sadness. He's a huge loss to the club. Even now, it's a big void. And we just hope we can do him justice in terms of going and lifting the league for Chris Farrell, because he, I think, devoted 8 to 10 years of his life to the club. And Chris being Chris is just a complete unusual character, in that was a real football bookworm, from non-league football, Sunday football, to his beloved Wolverhampton Wanderers. And nothing will do him prouder, I know it won't, in terms of us going on from here.
Yeah, it was sad. I never got the opportunity to meet Chris, but having spoken to so many people that knew him, and just his passion for the game, it's one of those special people that you only find in non-league.
It's unrivaled. It really is, Tim. I mean, if he was on the phone to you now talking football, it would be immensely longer than the period of time we would spend on the phone. He said he was passionate from Sunday football to local football to youth football to Wolverhampton, and that just shows you what love for the game he had. And in terms of knowing non-league football and players and recruitment, it's unrivaled in this area. So
now, many listeners, like myself, will remember your playing career: Eastleigh, Basingstoke, Gosport, Paul Town, and then a horrific knee injury curtailed your playing days. But was management always a thing before your injury?
It was always. I think sometimes when you have that position, you come into the end of your career, and it happened, I think, when I was 29, 30. I was starting to think about elements of coaching, because naturally you get involved in taking warm-ups and other various situations in football clubs. But management was never a huge desire, but coaching perhaps was. And it probably happened a little bit sooner than I anticipated. But I'm a great believer in things happen for a reason. And it certainly got me involved in management and football a little bit earlier than expected from that side of things.
Yeah, and then you came in at Blackfield and Langley, summer of 2015. I think you're just 31. So what sort of targets were you set by the club, coming in as such a young manager?
I think we had a chat, and the first season was a free hit, so to speak. You know, they wanted a challenge, but it is, and it still remains, a very competitive football league with the likes of Scholing, who we always compete against, and Andover last year. It was always difficult because you have to win the league to get out of it, you know. So it was about development. It was about seeing who we wanted to retain, who we wanted to keep, what we wanted to do moving forwards, which Chris was a big part of. And then the second season, we just fell short. So then the third season, we've had the benefit of playing at St Mary's a few times at cup finals, and then achieved our goal of promotion. So the club are very much on track, and I've been reasonably content of where they are from a footballing point of view.
Yeah, and what about yourself at targets in management? You've had another great season. Where do you want to go?
I don't really think about that too much. As I say to the players, there's been a lot of interest in the players, and rightly so, because they've had a brilliant season, every single one of them, and when they're achieving and doing well, they're going to take notice of scouts and other football clubs, and it's getting to that stage of the season. We just want to finish the season on a high.
Yeah, I did mention the village team at the outset there. I mean, is that a fair comment? Because it's a lovely place to live, and it's a lovely place to watch football, no doubt, as well. But there's not a lot in Blackfield, is there? I like driving through it, not because I like driving through it, but there's some great places around it as well. And it's maybe not the hotbed of non-league football that you'd expect for a club being in your position at the top of the table at the moment.
It's on the cusp of the New Forest, which is a beautiful part of the world, and that's one of the attractions. If you do win promotion, I think that the support base and fan base goes up significantly, and we really hope to sort of welcome these supporters to Blackfield and hopefully make a real weekend of it, and you know, display ourselves in a good light. We know we're one of the smaller clubs in the league, and particularly if we achieve promotion, certainly will be. And it's been a bit of an opener to some of these players going to these teams, because of course there's cities in our league, there's towns in our leagues, so we do have to fight our corner. But fight is what we will do, and hopefully earn the right to be in amongst these teams.
Yeah, and how far can the club go? You obviously passed the ground grading, which you know there was a fair bit of work to be done, and being a local to where you are, it was nice to see that you were able to achieve that. But how far can the club go beyond this?
I don't know, really. It'd be difficult to say we want to take the club to this level, to that level, because. You have to live within your means, and it'll be significantly harder to, for instance, you mentioned Mark and Weymouth, for a club of Blackfield to compete against them. It'd be very, very difficult. However, what we lack in numbers, we make up for in Hart. And we've played against Hartley and Witney, Salisbury and Gosport, albeit in the League Cup, but we've gave a good account of ourselves against them teams. And we would like to think that we can be competitive at the very least.
Yeah, so big game ahead on Saturday. Do you do anything differently, or do you just get those players focused on the right mindset?
No, I don't think so. I think the only thing, and I think Paul will tell you this for Yate, is from an anxiety point of view, it's managing that pressure, and it's managing that composure. And I think whichever team does that the best, because I don't think you can split the two sides. I really don't. You know, they beat us there in the cup, and rightly so. However, at home we lost them. I thought it was extremely unfortunate to lose 2-1. But that's the league. It's very competitive. It's very consistent. And I still feel there's no standout side in the league. So it's very, very competitive and very close. And as I said, whoever handles the pressure the most, I think we'll come away with victory Saturday.
Well, good stuff. We wish you well with that one, and wish Yate well as well, and look forward to seeing how the league finally pans out at the end of the season. Thanks for joining us on the Non-League Show.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for your time.
And so to our next guest, who's actually celebrating winning the league title already. Well, not just celebrating winning the league title, but he's got an opportunity to do it really in style. We're down at Step 6, Harefield United have taken the Spartan League Division 1 Championship, and they've still got 5 games to play. Top of the table and unbeaten this season. There's an opportunity for Jason Shaw, manager at Harefield United, to make some proper record books. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show.
Thank you, Tim.
Well, it's good to have you on, Jason. I've been following your progress, having grown up not too far away from Harefield United, and a old friend of the show, Russell Grant, is a big Harefield United fan, always telling me about the success. And it's been a great season for you guys, hasn't it? How's it come about? Well, what's the magic ingredient that's kicked it off this year?
Really, really can't put my finger on it. I'd have to put it down to the players. Their attitude and commitment for that level of football. They're religiously in 3 times a week. And obviously the finances at that level isn't the same as level 2 and level 1 of non-league. So it is very difficult to get the commitment. But the players have been very committed, and hopefully they're getting a reward for it.
Yeah, you mentioned the resources that you're playing with are completely different from maybe our first guest on the show this week, who were Weymouth. You've got quite a young outfit, but coupled together with some older heads as well. Is that a good mix that's worked really well for you this season?
It has, yes. The youth policy we've got at the club, we have at the moment in the first team, 4 to 5 players that have played Allied Counties under 18 football with the club for 2 years, progressed into the reserves and into the first team, and introducing the experience of Ryan Wharton, Richard Baguette and Adam Willis to the youngsters has paid off massively for us. The senior players have helped the youngsters fulfil the potential that the club saw in these young players.
Yeah, Richard Piquet, a man I know well from clubs that he's played for, and you know, probably a player that many non-league fans have seen. He's been at a number of clubs, and that must be a great different series of experiences that he can bring to your dressing room, having been in, well, I wouldn't like to overestimate, but probably 30-odd dressing rooms throughout his time, and some big clubs as well.
Yes, and it's another voice, you know, especially with the youngsters. We'll talk to them, Michael and I, on what we want them to do. Sometimes they might not understand it, and Richard, with his experience, like I say, is another voice. He will then pull them to one side. He'll have a little conversation with them. And if they didn't quite understand the delivery of the message from Michael and I, then they will get it from a player's perspective. So again, the likes of Richard, Ryan and Adam, they have helped Michael and I massively with that side of things.
Yeah, and this, it's obviously the message is getting through, because 32 wins this season, 2 away draws. Yeah, you went away, so you know, we can understand the draws. 110 goals for and only 30 against, 98 points, and the season's still not over. Get, is there now this extra, the golden goose to go unbeaten? Is that spurring everybody on to even get more out of them as their legs are maybe getting a bit tired as the season's wearing on?
It is. With the league being won last week, we had to refocus. Our first objective was completed. And like I say, the boys, despite having won the league, are still in Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday. I've not been giving them any nights off, to be fair, and none of them marched or moaned about it. So the next target is to try and remain unbeaten. And then followed by a points tally. I've set them a target to try and reach the 110 that's on the table at the moment. So that's the focus. We're taking one game as it comes, though. So our focus at the moment is Broxbourne, that fourth in our league. So that isn't going to be an easy fixture away to them. And yeah, it's just a case of keeping the guys focused.
Yeah, and your last game of the season, Saturday the 27th of April, home to Hatfield Town. I believe that the league are going to be presenting the trophy there. But the club's also chosen that to be one of these pay-what-you-want sort of games. So you're keen to get as many people down there and watch the side and celebrate your wins.
Yes. Hatfield's the oldest club in Middlesex, but it's surrounded by a number of non-league clubs. So, you know, we're trying to attract more people to the club. It's, you know, for me, obviously being involved, but I think it's a great little club with the youth set up from under sixes all the way through to the senior side. We've got 3 or 4 players in the first team, slightly older players, that actually came through the youth section on the Sundays. We've got the goalkeeper, Jacob, the captain, Sean, and I think Paul Underwood as well, and Steve Green. So, you know, there's 3 or 4 that have actually played youth football and progressed through the club. And we just want to give it a little bit more publicity and get people attracted to Hatfield. And by pay-as-you-go or pay-as-you-like, hopefully that's an opportunity to attract a few more local people down. They like what they see, and hopefully will come on a more regular basis next season.
Yeah, certainly talking to people in the local football fraternity to Hatfield, there's always good things coming out about Hatfield, and particularly the youth policy and giving the youth opportunity. And are you already looking at, you know, looking to expand your first team? You're looking down towards those youth team players as to see how they can link up with the first team and move forward into your setup?
Yes, 100%. Again, I attend as many youth team games as I can at the club. And if I can't, then Michael, my assistant, will attend. So we do monitor that as we monitor our reserves and their progression into reserves. And providing uni doesn't take about 4 or 5 of our current youth players next year, then there will be that number, 4 or 5, that I will be looking to include in and around the reserves and first team next year from the current batch of youth players we've got in the Allies.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because we often talk about, you know, giving youth an opportunity and that sort of thing, but there's other things that get in the way, like university, and there's a number of players that have gone off and, you know, maybe represented sides nearer their university, but it can... if you're running 17, 18-year-olds in your side, it can rip the heart out of your club, can't it?
Oh, it can, 100%. And like I say, there's a lot of potential in these four or five lads that Michael and I have seen. We're keen for them to stay involved with the football club, but obviously their education at this time in their life is going to be more important. So we understand we may lose them to uni. If we don't, then, you know, they will, I'm sure, make us a lot stronger in depth next season as well. Don't matter how old they are. We've had two or three already playing the first team. So I think there's some of them that are more than ready. They can't obviously fulfil 50-odd fixtures, but with the senior boys really covering most of the next year, if we get injuries, I've got no hesitation in putting some of these boys in if they're around.
Mm. And back into Step 5 next year, does that help you bring in some experienced players again and just give you a wider appeal as a club when you're trying to develop and bring new people into that first team setup?
Yeah, yes, 100%. You talk to a lot of players and they want to play at the highest level. So the more steps we can climb with Heffield, then the better players we'll attract. And the aim at the club is, yes, we've won promotion back to 5, but we would like to focus on in the next year or two trying to progress to Step 4.
Mm. And can the club go to Step 4, compete and maybe further than that?
I believe, yes. It's ground gradings, etc., for Step 4, like the facilities, etc. And at the moment, with everyone pulling together, I don't see why the club couldn't reach at least Step 4 as a minimum.
Yeah, and as a manager of a club with that sort of ambition and the potential, certainly the potential of the club is fantastic. Does that help you? You know, you're saying Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. It's a lot of commitment, isn't it? You mean people say about a part-time club. It's not part-time, is it? You're almost trying to fit your job in around your football.
100%. I'm up the club most times, at least 4 times a week. But that said, I've got my allied manager who runs the under-18s. He also, we keep continuity with him running our reserve side as well. So Derek's involved 4 times a week. But behind the scenes, there's a lot of other people that do near on 7 days a week. So yes, we may do a lot, but it's only the people behind the scenes that help us as well, that make it, you know, all worthwhile, seeing what they put in. You know, what we add is, again, it may sound a lot, but to what others are doing, it isn't as much as people may think.
Yeah, and I mentioned the potential of the unbeatables. You don't want to go too far ahead of yourself, but that would be some achievement, wouldn't it? It's the sort of thing that people certainly can't take away from you. You know, people win titles, you know, that happens every year, but going unbeatable in a season, that's quite a rare feat.
100%. We've been talking to the players about it. Again, it's one of the focuses. I've been in football now 30 years. I've never done it. So as a player, coach, manager, and I look around my dressing room, and again, we've got experienced players. They've never done it. And there isn't many that have. So they've got themselves into a unique situation where, yes, they could create something that very few footballers would be able to say that they've achieved. So we need to keep focused. You know, the priority was the league and we got that. So if we can get this other target, then, you know, brilliant. You know, yes, it would be good. But, you know, my main aim was the league and I've got that. So I would be disappointed, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Well, Jason, we'll be looking out and hoping that you get the win on Saturday and see the season through to the unbeatable phase. It's been good talking to you. And if anybody's available, do check out Heffield United. And it's a lovely village to visit and a great football club to go and watch some football at as well.
Yes, thanks a lot, Tim. And yeah, anyone wants to come down, we'll appreciate their support.
So time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and David Richardson, online editor, joins me on the line again. Welcome back to the show, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
I'm good, and it's been quite a quiet week in Non-League, but, you know, there's further down the pyramid, there's all these titles being wrapped up. They're way ahead of their time. You have certain clubs like Hazen United had to chuck it in there. But you look at the National League, and, well, the proverbial fact paper, but between certainly in the National League at the top of the table there, it's changed hands so many times. And you think Leighton Orient may be gone off the ball, and then they're back on top, 2 points clear, and the season's nearly over.
Yeah, changed around again. Sort of like you say, it's changing around sort of weekly at the moment, which is, you know, great going into the final few weeks now and the last four fixtures of the season. Obviously, Leighton Orient had a great result on Tuesday night. You know, turning it around against Eastleigh, who themselves are trying to get into the playoffs. You know, I think 2-1 down at half-time, I think many Orient fans will want to think, oh no, you know, are we going to have to settle for the playoffs here and do it that way? But yeah, really good sort of second half. Come back from Orient, and yeah, once again, they're back on top and it's still in their hands, 2 points clear.
And you can't, I know there are knockers and people have criticised the different style of playoffs that the National League have introduced, but it means that the season just goes on and goes on and goes on, doesn't it? So you've got this weekend, you've got Leighton Orient at the top, and their away game is at Sutton United. And you might have thought that Sutton United were out of the playoff chase this year, but they're only 3 points off. You know, if they win that, then maybe some other results go their way. It makes this a big game for both clubs.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, there's been a lot of sort of talk around that new playoff structure since it came in a couple of seasons ago. But yeah, like you were saying, I think it's done really well for the league to keep everything competitive right up until the last, really. You know, like you mentioned, Sutton still have a chance of getting in. Even Gateshead have, you know, what is an outside chance, but they feel like if they can get 12 points from their last four games, then, you know, they could well get in there. And yeah, it does keep the season alive for clubs sort of down to 10th place, really. Obviously, there's always the usual arguments, isn't there, that, you know, a team that finishes 7th and might be sort of at least 10 points behind the team in 2nd wouldn't deserve their place in the Football League if they were to go through the playoffs and win at Wembley. But, you know, the 2nd and 3rd place is based around giving those teams an advantage. Obviously, they have the home tie in the semi-final. They don't have to go through the eliminator round. You know, the only thing I would say is that 2nd place should play the lowest team, whoever gets through. So it's obviously 4th against 7th and 5th against 6th. And 2nd place plays either 5th or 6th. And it could be a case that actually 3rd place has, in a way, an easier tie if 7th place was to get through. So I think 2nd place should always just have that one, have the team who finished lower down. But no, I'm all for the new playoff structure. And like you say, you know, that's not going to be an easy game for Leighton Orient at Sutton. They've had some problems on 3G pitches over the couple of seasons in this division, and obviously going to Sutton's not going to be easy there. A club that's, you know, really established themselves at National League level and gunning for the playoffs again for a second season.
Yeah, the one thing about the playoffs as they work now, it means that no one's cruising once they're in that playoff. So you can't take your foot off the gas because you want to finish as high as possible to get that advantage. And, you know, the other game involving those top two, Salford City taking on Maidenhead United in the early kickoff. So we could see another change of leadership before even the 3 o'clock kickoffs.
Yeah, interesting point, Tim, you say about even when you're in the playoff situation, you want to try and finish high up in the matter. Like I said, 2nd and 3rd go straight into the semi-final. It means they don't have to play an extra game to get to that stage. And of course, you're looking for the home advantage in those sides, which can be so crucial, particularly because they're over one leg. So yeah, like I say, it's still all to play for once you are in those positions. And again, I think with Salford playing first this weekend in the early kickoff, you know, I think Orient will by the time they walk out at Sutton, they'll know how the table lies, I should think, and what's happened in that early game. And if Salford can win, it does add pressure, I think. You know, I don't think you can lie and say anything else, really, because, you know, they will know the scoreline and they'll know that they have to win.
Yeah, and then you look at the bottom four look like they're fairly solidified. I know Lee Bradbury's come out again this week saying that they're not giving up hope at having in Waterlooville, but they are nine points adrift at the moment. Mm-hmm. So it looks like it will be those four southern based teams that are dropping out, which then means a rejuggle, and then you drop down and have a look, you know, who's likely to be coming up but at National North. And that's changed as well. Stockport County, who have been, you know, they've had a great season anyway, but they've suddenly hit form, and, you know, smashing, was it six pass at Chester this week.
Yeah.
And whatever the story behind it, that's some feat.
Yeah, definitely. Stockport have been going really well since about the turn of the year. I had a feeling this season that they were going to have a real good go at promotion. I just thought they got into the playoffs last year and lost in them, but that was the first time they'd got into the top seven since they'd been in that division for about 5 years. And I just thought Jim Gannon was sort of building something. They were moving towards sort of the hybrid / full-time model. I just felt they were going to give it a really good go. And like I say, you know, this year they've been absolutely flying. You know, going to Chester on Tuesday night, you think that was going to be a really tough game. Chester obviously had hopes of getting into the playoffs as well. But I think that just shows perhaps the gulf between, you know, the two sides and probably the gulf between sort of the team who's sitting at the top and the rest of the league, really. You know, they're a point ahead of Chorley now, and you look at Chorley's running, which is really
tough, isn't it?
You know, you do sort of think Stockport will do it, but you know, they won't be resting on their laurels, that's for sure. There's still a long way to go, even if it is a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and then at the bottom, we've already seen the Neaton Borough relegated. Yeah, FC United at Manchester just don't seem to be able to get out of there. They look like they're going to be cut adrift and, you know, dropping down a level again. And then you've got a big game this weekend, Aston United travelling to Guiseley. And I understand that the Aston United board are paying for fans to go to the game on coach to try and get as much support behind them.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, really, given the size of the game. It really is sort of a relegation six-pointer. I think FC United are cut adrift. They've been fighting hard to try and get out of there, but they just haven't quite had the consistency. You know, 6 points adrift now, I can't see it happening. But, you know, Ashton will be have a very clear picture of what they have to do. You know, 4 points behind Guiseley, a win could really turn that situation at the bottom around. And Guiseley have been on a torrid run of form. You just think that, you know, I think their board are obviously thinking if they can get any sort of advantage with fans getting behind the side to cheer them on there, then they've got to take it, because, you know, after relegation from the National League last season, another one would be catastrophic, really.
Mm. And then National South, we had a right old ding-dong of a game last Saturday at the top there with Woking and Torquay drawing 3-3 in the end. But it does look like it's Torquay's title now to lose. And we had Gary Johnson on last week, and it was loath to admit it, but I think that's the way it's heading. And then you've got another massive game for Woking this weekend, because they travel to Chelmsford. Woking second, Chelmsford are fourth. And again, it's if you're going to be in the playoffs, you want to finish as high up as possible.
Yeah, definitely. I think, first of all, I went to that Woking Torquay game last weekend, and it really was a fantastic advert for non-league. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but 3-3, you know, the top two teams, both trying to win the game, even though a point would have suited Torquay, and obviously it turned out that way, and it has. It was a fantastic game. You know, Woking will feel hard done by that. They sort of threw it away, really, in the last 10 minutes. But, you know, I think even though Torquay weren't at their best, it's sort of that old adage that, you know, the teams that finish at the top of the league or win promotion are the ones that manage to somehow grind out results. And speaking to Gary Johnson afterwards, I think, you know, he admitted that is what champions do, getting those sort of results. For Woking, it was a shame for them because I think, you know, they deserve more than a point. But now they'll have to settle for the playoffs. I just think perhaps having sort of a couple of weeks now to refocus on the title being gone and readjust their targets. It might not be such a bad thing in the long run. Often you see sort of the team that finishes second, as a big disappointment at the end of the season, maybe on the final day. And then suddenly the playoffs come around and they sort of haven't got their heads around it. But like you say, Chelmsford this weekend, it's not going to be easy at all. They haven't shored up second place yet. Obviously, Welling are on their tails. And that's obviously the position you want to be in, particularly with the final being at home at the second place team. So that'll be a really tough test, and might be a little preview of a playoff clash maybe in a few weeks.
Well, that's it, because it's an interesting point you make about Woking. You're almost being able to come to terms with grieving for losing the title and getting into the playoffs. But then there's a potential that you're playing the club that you're going to be playing in an even bigger game in a few weeks' time. And the psychology that goes with that, it's fascinating. And that's where a manager really earn their corn.
Yeah, they do. I think Alan Dowson's had a terrific season with Woking. When you consider what the club was like when he arrived and no players on the books and obviously had just been relegated from the National League. Of course, they had the FA Cup run as well, so the third round, which sort of almost, goes out a little bit unnoticed somehow. And obviously they lost to Watford in the third round, who are now in the final. You wonder what, maybe they'd be at Wembley in May had they not lost that one. I think Alan Dowson done a great job there, and he'll have no he won't be taking these next few weeks lightly at all, whether they finished second place or not. He knows how difficult it will be in the playoffs and even against Chelmsford and then Concord in the next couple of weeks. Of course he lost in the playoff final last year, so he won't want a repeat of that again. I think there's a lot for Woking to contemplate in the next few weeks, but it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. And like I say, you look at that top seven, you probably think any one of those could really win the playoffs on their day, to be honest. It's just over the course of the season, Woking have been a little bit more consistent, and now they really need that in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting final few weeks, but an exciting weekend as well. What else can we look forward to in the paper, David?
So we've got some reaction from the champions from last week. Obviously, Dorking won promotion for the Bostic League. And going into National South, we've spoken to them, Bowes and Pitsy, and Hayes and Yedding as well, also champions. Hayes and Yedding back on the up after a few tough years, which is great to see. Of course, they've got a new stadium as well, which will surely help them in the future going forward. And obviously, we've got all the action from steps 1 to 6, all the big games in the National League and lower down the pyramid. So if you can get out and support the paper, that'd be brilliant.
Non-league paper every Sunday during the season. Go and buy it. Make sure you do. David, thanks for joining us again and have a great weekend.
Cheers, Tim. Thank you.
That's it for this week. Thank you for your time and everybody for listening. Don't forget you can find us throughout the season and join in the debate throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show and myself at Tim Fuel. Dave Anderson is also at Dave Anderson 78. And of course, remember, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, also on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, on Deezer, on Google Podcasts, on Radio Public, on Spotify, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabba production. JIBBA JABBA